Couple of great geeks, Dave and Anna, the geekiest people you'll ever meet, on 92.5 KYHY, Geek World, Thursdays at noon.
We're back. You're listening to Geek World on 92.5 KYHY. You can send us an email to geekworldradio@yahoo.com and check out our website, geekworldradio.com. Totally updated.
Yes.
Keeps on getting updated.
Yes.
We'll
probably have this episode probably on the blog by the time this airs.
No, we're not going to put this up before it airs.
Oh, I wouldn't mean it airs. That doesn't make sense.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the time the lost episode airs.
You know, I am still so like overwhelmed by all the awesome information we got from David Bell, and just, you know, being, even if we weren't in his presence, just, you know, just hearing his voice,
I know,
was enough. I feel like I have superpowers.
I've been imbued with David Bell powers.
Yeah, I feel like, you know,
I've walked into less doors lately.
Yeah, I feel like I've got like the Green Lantern ring or something over here. I feel like I'm like totally like superhuman now.
I feel like if I happened to have to jump from a rooftop, I'd be okay.
Most likely, yeah. I think we should try
Thank
it.
Goodness, yeah. No. If I happened to have to jump. Not that I choose to, yeah.
Oh, you sure about
that? Yeah, that's like,
sure?
I'm not going to risk it, but I feel like, I feel like the essence of David Bell would protect me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I know that. So, yeah, we have to of course, thank David Bell for the fantastic interview.
Thank you to Ted Magnolia Pictures for letting us take the time with him.
Yep, and the good folks at Magnet, and I thought the translator was great, so Daniel Scherer, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And, really fantastic. I mean, come on. Not only do we get everything about District 13 Ultimatum we want, but we got to find out a little bit about his childhood, about Spider-Man, that Jerry Bruckheimer gets what Jerry Bruckheimer wants, little Prince of Persia action, and even a possible American sequel to District 13.
Oh, really exciting. I like how some of our questions, like, you know, when we asked about if he and Cyril Raffaelli were friends, we weren't exactly expecting it to be such an easy answer.
No,
the answer of, they live about a mile apart. Oh, wow. Yeah, so that, we were expecting a little more, like, you know, maybe after the first movie or something, they became buddies, or because they both are really active people that, like, you know, but no. Yeah, they're friends and they live like a mile apart. Oh, okay.
it's so funny. I mean, and yeah, like we said, you know, and we're going to start talking about District 13, is those guys are just so awesome together, and they're so funny, and they really have that whole, like, buddy cop mojo going on.
They really do.
Of them. And it's really fun, you know, to have a movie where, you know, these movies sort of remind me of Jackie Chan movies, where you have, like, this really amazing action set pieces and really, like, sort of visceral action, and then, you know, when that's not going on, there's a lot of humor in there.
Yeah.
And those two guys together are just so funny.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to say my favorite moment of that interview was when David Bell asked us what we thought about Boston.
Oh my God. So all of you out there who are in Boston right now, you probably hate us.
You're like,
what's wrong with Boston? And we're not saying there's anything wrong with Boston. Like, I totally think that seeing David Bell hop around Harvard, you know,
yes.
Avid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or hopping around like the harbor.
Wouldn't it be great if when David Bell learned, as he said, American English.
Oh, God.
If it was with a Boston accent.
No, oh, my God. That would be
awesome.
Oh, my God.
It could be the Departed 2.
I don't think
with
that.
Parkour.
Somehow I don't think that French and Boston accent mix at all.
I got a great idea. You know, I think we should have Departed 2 and then, like,
starring David Bell.
In the very beginning, David Bell can, like, you know, just kick Leo off a skyscraper or something.
I know who I'd like to see him kick off a skyscraper.
Huh.
Someone who talks to animals.
Yeah.
Mark Wahlberg,
right.
Oh, Mark Wahlberg. Anyways.
Gonna do. That was
pretty funny. But
I love it. It's like, what do you think about Boston? We like San Francisco.
You know, we're not saying that he shouldn't do Boston. But first off, Boston is way too far away from us.
That's the main thing.
And it's really, like, how could we stalk him if he were, you know, in Boston?
That is the main thing, yes.
Like, if he's in San Francisco, we could find a way, you know, we could make it up there. We could, like, you know, get binoculars and get a hotel that's near where they're filming and stare.
It's just so funny. funny. You know, it's all about context.
Or, you know, maybe we could actually get a set visit or something. You know, that's less fun.
It's all about context because the night before we were talking about that David Bell should do an American movie and that he should be, you know, unlike, you know, Casino Royale, where he played Daniel Craig doing parkour.
Yeah.
He should be in a movie in America. And we kept on thinking about San Francisco.
We're imagining him on like the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yes.
Like I've decided that, you know how there are all those great car chases in San Francisco in movies?
Yeah.
Well, I think that the next one should be like him running from a car or something, like running and jumping around those hills.
Yeah,
like, it'd be crazy.
I think they should have a car chase where like they jump over the like those, you know, huge like hills.
Yeah,
and, you know, where they where the cars get airborne and like
yeah. Imagine how airborne he could get.
Exactly, the car could jump and then he could be on top of the car and then he could jump off the car that's jumping onto another car that's jumping.
Oh my god!
Come on!
Oh my god! Yeah, without wires.
Yes,
because that's just what he can do.
However, Boston is also fantastic.
Yeah, and, you know,
I've only been there once though, so I don't even know what he could climb all over.
I've got it. He can do a little bit in Boston and then come to San Francisco.
Yes.
You know?
He said Venice too, so I'm assuming he means that he'd
right by us. Yeah, Venice in California. Yeah. So, you know, we've got tiny little canals or something.
So, you know, Dave, if you're ever around, you're more than welcome to crash at our place.
We don't have a spare room, but we do have an air mattress.
Yeah. I mean, you know, because Venice, that's what he meant, right? The Venice in California.
Of course, Dave.
Duh.
Of course.
Yes.
What is wrong with you? Of course, that's what he meant.
We have too much stuff planned today to talk about what's wrong with me. just a fantastic interview. So thank you very much again, David Bell. So now we should probably talk about
the movie.
The movie, District 13 Ultimatum.
So we've often talked about District 13, District B-13.
We love that movie.
It was our first real introduction to who David Bell is.
Yep.
It was one of our first real strong introductions to parkour.
Yep.
And
I would say my first, certainly.
And you know, you had seen it before, just, you know, as David Bell as a stuntman doing it for someone else and not knowing it was called parkour.
Well, we saw District 13 before Casino Royale, though, right?
Well, yeah, but David Bell, I think, was doing stunts and stuff before that, like doing his thing.
I have his filmography here.
Yeah. Wow.
He was in Transporter 2.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Crimson River 2.
Yeah.
And Transporter 2.
But yeah.
Babylon AD.
So we love that movie. We have watched that movie so many times. It's Luc Besson wrote it.
Uh-huh.
Pierre Morel directed it.
Yes.
And
Mr. Taken.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that's got such amazing action, and then this great director that films it so perfectly that he captures everything that you'd want to see, and captures David Bell in all his glory.
Yeah, I would say District B-13 is one of these great movies that's sort of like lightning in a bottle, where you get, you know, someone like David Bell who, you know, does something that no one else really does, or if they do, certainly not as well as he does.
Mm-hmm.
And you compound that kind of mind-blowing action with this new director who, you know, now that we've seen it, is very good, you know, after B-13 he'd Taken, and he's doing that new movie Paris with Love, and of course directing Dune.
So, and even for those of you who Taken might not have been your favorite movie because, like, you know, you weren't into the story, you still have to admit what great directing it was.
I don't get anyone who doesn't like Taken. I don't get it.
Yeah,
I get
well,
I don't think your parents liked it.
But I think that's a generational thing.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of think that it's purely a generational thing.
Yeah. Well, I think if you were around during when like Death Wish came out,
I think
stuff,
if my parents could do parkour, that they would have appreciated Taken more too. You know, because if like they felt like they were invincible.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Yeah. See there.
Because there was a lot of parkour in Taken.
No. Not like I'm saying that if my parents like could do something like parkour.
Yeah.
You know, if they could feel invincible, then they would have liked Taken more.
Yes.
You know, because Taken is like, you know, Liam, who's like, you know, he's older now, you know,
right. Yes.
And but he's off being invincible.
Yes, he
you
is.
Know. So,
but enough about Taken. Let's talk about District 13 Ultimatum.
District 13 Ultimatum.
So this movie, I'm just gonna give a, I'm gonna give the synopsis here.
You do
I'm
that.
So good at that. This movie happens.
Just don't go on forever.
This movie happens between 2 to 3 years after the first movie, and basically, you know, we start in District 13, and though there have been some changes, and the government promised some changes, in the end, District 13 is still a mess. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting because in this movie, unlike the first District 13, where sort of like they were setting up the kind of escape from New York type, you know, area to showcase the action, this movie actually has a lot to do with District 13. The opening scene kind of reminded me of something like, you know, Children of God or something, where, you know, you get a real like sense of what District 13 is all about, like the different groups and different gangs that kind of run it.
Well,
and
while the first movie was very much about David Bell and his sister and Ciro Raffaelli's character.
Yes.
District 13 itself is a character.
Yeah, definitely.
So.
Definitely. You know, from there we were introduced to Leto, mm-hmm. David Bell's character, and it's actually, like I said in the interview, it's a really cool slash really funny scene because he's just walking around and then you see him for a second and then all of a sudden you see him place something on a wall and push a button and then he walks and all of a sudden there's an explosion behind him because he's setting up like little claymore mines to blow, you know, to take down the wall between, you know, District 13 and the rest of Paris, and it's just a really funny scene. And from there, you know, the action starts. And you know, I gotta say, I hope they make as many of these movies as they want.
Yeah, I agree.
I really, really like this movie. I think that, you know, the one thing that is difficult about the movie is the fact that District B-13 is such a strong action movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's so strong, and like I said, it's stuff you've never seen before.
Yeah.
And so I would say that, you know, there's a lot of competition between, you know, raising the pushing the envelope, rather, between the two.
By the way, for those of you who aren't familiar with the term parkour, you may have heard the term free running, because in America a lot of people refer to it as free running, and there's actually a lot of really, really talented American free runners. So
I'm sure there are.
I mean, there's that one who won the American Ninja Challenge and then made it to Ninja Warrior,
right,
and then made it to the final stage of Ninja Warrior.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there is some talent out here in America, which, you know, the next one. We are all about it being here in America because
totally.
they could have some really, really good people to work with David Bell doing some crazy stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that
wireless work, you know?
I can't wait, you know? And like I said, you know, it would be awesome to have him play the same character, Leto. And, you know, it would be a bummer to not have the Damien character. But
I know.
Still,
I would be so upset.
You know, it's funny. It's one of those things that, you know, Ciro Raffaelli is a fantastic martial artist, and he really showcases it in this movie. I think maybe even more so in this movie than the first movie.
Well, yeah, the first one had such a great showcase of parkour, but this one has a stronger showcase of martial arts.
Yeah.
Even David Bell does like more like hitting people and stuff.
Yeah, and David Bell does, you know, he does know martial arts, mm-hmm. and, you know, parkour is his main thing, but clearly, you know, the two go hand in hand. And but yeah, there's just one scene with Ciro Raffaelli that, you know, I would have to say starts off a tad disturbing.
I
have to say for some of you guys out there, but it's actually very funny. But there's this amazing scene where Ciro Raffaelli fights like six dudes with a painting. It is the greatest scene to ever feature a Van Gogh.
Well, he fights them while protecting a painting.
It's brilliant. It's
amazing.
Brilliant. And, you know, Ciro Raffaelli did the fight choreography. And
well, see, there you go. Like, they could at least still have him here doing the fight choreography, because his fight choreography is so good.
Oh, he's fantastic.
So good.
Very,
yeah.
Very innovative.
But I know what you're saying about how they wouldn't need him in a sequel necessarily if they brought it to America, and like that no one in America knows who Ciro Raffaelli is and stuff. But like at the same time, the chemistry between those two is so perfect.
I agree.
Like, they are just they've really, you know, you can see that they are actually friends, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And in this movie there was so much more comedy to it.
Yeah.
And like they were both really good, because like the looks that they would give each other and the way that they'd interact, it was just I wouldn't want Ciro Raffaelli to not be there. I would be so sad.
Well, I agree in the way that, you know, in the way that the two characters go hand in hand so well, and they're written very well, and the fact that, you know, it really is about the, you know, the teaming of the two kind of, you know, more odd couple guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, I love Ciro Raffaelli ever since, you know, Kiss of the Dragon, when I saw him fighting Jet Li, and, you know, he was in Die Hard, Live Free or Die Hard,
yeah.
And, you know, he's been in a lot of, you know, American movies. But I really think in the the end, you know, it's the parkour stuff that really shines through.
Because that's what's different.
Exactly.
That's, yeah, it's not just martial arts.
And so, you know, we're not going to go play by play. You should see this movie. Some of the things we should talk about, though, are some of the big things. Like, you know, this huge rooftop chase scene that David mm-hmm. Bell does, which is very much like the first scene in the District B-13. And I mean that so much as a compliment, because it's just awesome to see him running across rooftops and jumping.
Oh my
god!
It's inhuman what he does.
Yes,
yeah. and he mentioned in the interview the one part of the scene where he, you know, flips up from the balcony up
yeah.
to the next balcony. Now, visually, that is one of the most incredible things to see. And literally, when we were watching it, we were like, "Oh my god! Did he do that?" Like,
yeah.
To find out that it was with wires and stuff, that makes total sense. It doesn't take away from how cool it looks.
Isn't it amazing,
but
though?
At the yeah. same time, the stuff that he actually does
yeah.
is just as cool, if not cooler, a lot of it. And that stuff he actually does without the wires. And
I agree. You know, it's funny because that one scene you're talking about, when he flips up, you know, when I first saw it, I figured it must have been wire work.
Yeah,
only
how
because,
could it be real?
Only because it breaks every law of physics.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, having someone who moves like him and is so professional like him,
yeah.
it looks like it was real.
Because he's constantly
like,
breaking the laws
yeah.
of physics.
And but, okay, the coolest thing in this movie, or at least one of them, there's so many cool things, is there's this one jump where he's jumping from building to building, and, like, you already see the jump, like, pretty far, but then the camera, like, mega pushes back, and you see, like, literally the entire, like, you know, size of the buildings and, like, the scope of that jump, and it is, like, the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Followed by that one when the guys are chasing him and he goes through that, like shed thing and closes the door.
Yeah.
The guys run into
Which is funny, because there was something in the first one that was like that on a kind of smaller scale,
yeah.
but this one was so much better.
Yeah, I mean, it was just unbelievable. And, yeah, you know, this one has some of the same themes in the first one. You know, they're getting set up
yeah.
by an evil group, and they gotta, you know, come together again to take them down. And you know, I really liked it. You know, there's a lot of really good fight scenes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of cool parkour scenes. And like we said, you know, I think, you know,
this one has a lot more acting than the other one.
It does. And I think the thing that we both decided while watching it is one of the reasons we really like this is it just has so much humor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when there isn't, like, these awesome fight scenes and these great parkour scenes, the two of them are hilarious together.
Well, yeah, it's in a way, it's kind of in the spirit of, like, a Die Hard, where
yeah.
there's so much, you know, just so much comedy infused throughout it. Now, one of the things about District B-13 and District 13 Ultimatum is that you're not going to see these movies because you're looking for a great acting job. No, I'm saying this is why you wouldn't go to see, like, you wouldn't specifically go for an Oscar performance,
right.
You know? You wouldn't specifically go to, you know, for French cinema. You know what I mean?
But that's the best part, actually, because what I love about these movies is, like, you can feel like, wow, I'm
watching
so
a foreign film.
I'm so cultured. I watch foreign films, and you know, that's what's great. You know, you can be like, well, I care about French cinema.
Yeah, but you watch these for the action, and you watch these to watch people defy physics, and you watch them because they are just the most visually stimulating thing, and you can't take your eyes off them, and it's so fun.
Yeah. You know, I think that what I liked about this one, too, is, you know, the first one had a lot of great scenes, but was also pretty disturbing. It had that dystopia, like, feel to it.
Yeah.
I felt like this one wasn't as disturbing. I felt like this one was a little more, like, lighthearted and fun.
Well, because, yeah, the first one felt desperate. Like, not, I'm sorry, I don't mean that the film
there was
making
an air of desperation yeah. for the characters.
For the, yes, yeah, yeah. Thank you.
But
yeah,
geez,
I didn't
mean
that.
Wow.
No, the movie itself does not reek of desperation or anything like that.
Anime, these are people we don't want to piss off.
I know, right?
One guy flies, and the other guy beats people up with $200 million paintings. So let's be nice.
Yeah, no.
Let's be very nice.
There was like this.
And not hit the mic.
You get
David Bell can jump across skyscrapers, and you can't help but ram your hand into your mic.
Well, I couldn't tell where the mic was.
That's true.
I can't tell where anything is in space or in relation to me.
Wow.
I have no idea.
Wow.
I know. Well, you knew.
Oh, I did know. Yeah, I did know.
That's why I always bump into things and trip over my own feet. And, you know. Anyways, enough about me.
No, let's talk about you.
So like in the first movie, there was like this. The characters were desperate. You know, it was desperate to to make a change in the district. In this one, it was like, well, you guys already promised us a change. We're going to freaking make it happen. So that's... Yeah.
Yeah. And I like, instead of passive aggressive, Leto was aggressive aggressive. Like, you know, just blowing up the wall was the funniest thing. And
that's how you started.
Yeah. And it was really great, too, because, you know, this movie was very much about, you know, Leto, you know, being a freedom fighter mm-hmm. for the district and for the gangs in the district, you know, at first, you know, wanting, like, leave well enough alone. This is our place.
This is our kingdom.
You know, we run this place. And then, you know, everyone sort of having to put aside their differences. And also, one of the funny things, too, is, you know, I didn't realize this because I don't really listen to a lot of French rap, but apparently most of the gang leaders were French rappers.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, you know, it's like...
It's funny because
it's like when
so
DMX
much of
does a movie here, or Ja Rule, or Ludacris.
Exactly. So much of the music in these movies was rap, and I'm sure it was mostly those guys. And, they're not actors. They're just rappers, but they all play their part. You know? I like how this one, though, you were saying how it started with him blowing up things, and that was very much in relation to, you know, the bigger scale from what he was doing in the first one. In the first one, the first time you see him, he's dumping the bad guy's drugs.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, he'd stolen the bad guy's drugs and he was dumping them.
It's true. You know, that's what I love about, you know, movies that Luc Besson does. Even if, you know, because he's done so many American films and the reason he became so famous in America is because of this, is that he's able to translate ideas so that the language barrier doesn't matter. Yeah. You know, from the very beginning of the first District 13, like you said, the guy's dumping drugs, so you know he's good. You don't even have to hear him say anything.
That's the other thing, that, like, everything that they do feels justified, you know? Yeah. It's like, that's how Luc Besson writes his characters, that even if they've been through tough times, even if they do things that you might not see as, like, being the best thing, like Leto in the first one, he does kill a cop, but it's after that cop gave his sister to the bad guys.
That is, like, one of the coolest scenes ever.
Locked him in jail and gave his sister to the bad guys, even though he walked into the station with proof of the bad things that they had done, you know?
Yeah,
it's like,
a briefcase full of drugs.
Then the cop goes, well, it was either me give them your sister or, you know, I might die. And he goes, you made the wrong choice. It's like, and you sit there and you're like, I'm so with Leto.
Yeah,
you
totally.
Know? So it's like, but that's Luc Besson writes his good guys as good guys.
I agree.
They are good. They are pure and they are true hearted.
But I want to talk about some of the really big moments in this movie that I really love. You know, first and foremost, that rooftop chase is amazing. Like we talked about, tons of great parts in that. Second, that part with Ciro Raffaelli, the Damien character, fighting all those guys and protecting the painting was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
After that, there's another scene where Ciro Raffaelli fights a bunch of, like, cops, and it's so awesome. It's a really great fight scene. You know, followed by, there's this amazing scene when they're driving through a building. I mean, it's just, like, it's unreal. It's so funny. I was really impressed. I really like this a lot. And, mm-hmm. and I just, you know, it's a strong sequel to a very, very strong action movie.
The way that I see it is that, though, they're kind of different movies because, like we were saying, the first one is so much more action and so much of largely a showcase for parkour.
Yes.
You know, this one adds that comedy element and really tries to bring it more in the diehard feel and and the one thing that kind of disappointed me in this is that Pierre Morel has this artistic style where everything, every shot he makes, you can feel the art, you know?
Yeah.
And this one was just more, it was shot more like a regular action film.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't have that that kind of flow and beauty to it, but at the same time, it felt right for an action comedy.
I agree, yeah. You know, Patrick Alessandrin, who directed this, I thought he did do a good job, but it's funny that, you know, the first District 13, Pierre Morel had never directed an action movie
mm-hmm.
before, and you know, this is Patrick Alessandrin's first movie, and I did think he did well, but it's just, you know...
Pierre Morel,
you know, he's a really great director. I think, you know, I really enjoyed this movie, and like I said, you know, when we weren't like, whoa, you know, we were laughing, because it was really funny, and they did attempt to have, I think, more of a narrative story in this one, more of a complex storyline.
Which doesn't always work when you really want to be seeing the parkour. But at the same time, it's like, well, if it didn't have a story, we'd be whining about how it doesn't have a story.
Exactly. No, yeah. I thought it was a really good balance.
But yeah, but when you've got a line that, you know, your main guy has been set up and thrown in jail, and he's calling up his friend, and the last line is, so if you could pick me up, that'd be cool.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh my God, you guys are awesome.
And the first time they reunite is just so funny. It's
yeah.
so great. And I love the fact, you know, part of the reason we also asked that Spider-Man question to David Bell is they even say in the movie, Damian character says, you go do your Spider-Man thing.
Yeah.
I'll take care of this.
Oh my God, it's so cool that he put on the costume and was possibly going to be the body of Spider-Man.
Well,
so cool.
he could still be the body of Spider-Man since they're rebooting it anyway.
That's true.
But I would rather him, like, I want America to know who David Bell is.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know? I want America to like want David Bell in movies. You know what I mean?
I totally agree. You know, and I think, you know,
and not just as guy in the suit.
Well, and that's the other reason why, you know, when they do the sequel, they will have an American
actor.
That's
right. So when they do the sequel, when.
Oh, it's going to be when it has to be. And, they will have an American actor because, you know, more Americans will probably go see it because of that. So,
yeah.
you know, it'll be good. I really like District 13 Ultimatum and
Jean Reno will probably show up in the movie.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Jean Reno must show up. I really don't have anything, you know, bad to say about it. I think that, the only thing I can say is that it's, you know, they had a huge challenge trying to top the first movie because movie is unreal.
But they made a really good choice to not try and make it exactly the same kind of movie. Instead of making it this pure, morally pure action film, to really take it more in the direction of comedy. It was a good choice on their part.
I agree, yeah. I mean, I think this is very, very much like Lethal Weapon, these movies remind me of,
yeah.
actually.
Is
Lethal Weapon in the sequel?
Well, it's funny because the Cyril Raffaelli character is pretty much the main character of Hot Fuzz.
Yeah.
You know, he's the guy that can do it all,
yeah.
and he's the guy that you call.
I think Leto even called him Super Cop or something.
Probably.
Yeah.
But actually, we're going to take our final quick break, and when we come back, well, we might talk a little bit more about District 13, but we've also got some absolute justice.
Yes.
So sit back, relax, and we'll be back with some more David Bell, District Ultimatum, District 13 Ultimatum, and some absolute justice.
Two people who really get upset about Smallville. Geek World.
Geek World.
Thumpin' Thursdays at noon.
This is Allison Mack from Smallville, and you're listening to Geek World.
You're listening to Geek World on 92.5 KYHY. We are your superhero, superhost, anime, and Dave, bringing you the best in the world of geek. So, are you following us on Twitter? Twitter.com/geekworldradio? And have you checked out our website yet?
Have you?
Geekworldradio.com. It's been updated. We actually have been updating. You should be proud of us.
It's amazing. I'm proud of us. I'm proud of me. Very proud of me, mostly. Yeah, just me. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So we hope that you guys all enjoyed the David Bell interview and stuff. And
I think we all learned a little something about ourselves, about the world, about speaking French.
And don't worry, the entire interview will be up on our website, and you know, all of our shows are available for podcasts. So.
Yes. We have to meet the man now, though. I it's not enough to just talk to him on the phone.
It's true.
Meet him, which most likely means I will stalk
him.
Wait,
Dave. Do you mean you need to know him?
I must know him. Yeah, David Bell was fantastic. We're really very happy to get that interview, and very happy to see the movie also.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely go out and see District 13.
We were happy to see the movie before you.
Ultimatum. But yes, now we are talking about a big TV event.
Mm-hmm.
We are talking about Smallville Absolute Justice.
Yay!
I gotta say, you know, right off the bat, I think this is one of the best Smallvilles I've ever seen.
I have to say, right off the bat, what's the deal with Smallville lately? We've had nothing to get upset about. Like, you know, our thing is that we get upset about Smallville. We're so invested in Smallville.
You know what's funny? If Smallville were a baseball player, everyone would say it's on steroids right now.
Yeah, like, yeah, you know, you're so right.
It's sort of like Mark McGwire was like a decent hitter, and all of a sudden he's like 40, and he like breaks the home run record, and then now people are like, what? He was on steroids?
Yeah.
That's sort of what Smallville's doing.
Are you trying to say that the Smallville writers are on steroids?
They must be. They're on some sort of,
Have you been drinking the kryptonite?
Oh, yeah. They must be, because honestly, like, it's the ninth season, and to come out with such a strong episode in the ninth season.
So what you're saying is that by the end of this season, the like supervillains are just going to be the writers of the episodes.
I mean,
because like they must be drinking the crypto juice.
They
like,
must be. Yeah.
They're going to be the freaks of the week.
Well, you know, they must be eating that gum that they got from
from
Oh God,
Sam Jones III.
Do we ever talk about that?
what the...
But he got, like, arrested?
Oh, yeah. Well,
we're talking about that, huh? Let's not talk about
Let's not.
That. No.
That was enough talking about it,
we're
Dave.
We're editing that out. Not. But yeah, let's talk about Absolute Justice. I gotta say, this was great. You know, I think a lot of people have seen the previews. You probably have already seen it by this time. But what we got this time was the Justice Society of America.
You know what's really frustrating?
No.
That the CW, like, we're really enjoying CW shows this year.
Yeah.
We're also loving Fox. You know, I mean, Human Target and everything. But, I mean, the fact that we're actually enjoying Vampire Diaries kills me.
Well, you know, you gotta look at it a few ways. The first way you have to look at it is it's no longer the WB.
That's true.
Now that it's CBS with Warner Brothers together.
That's a good point.
And since CBS has, like, pretty much been destroying all the ratings outside of Fox with American Idol for years with stuff like all the CSIs and everything else, like, you know, they're bringing more game now.
And the other thing is that Vampire Diaries is really what everything else that we've watched with vampires in it is based on, as we keep learning.
And the funny thing about Vampire Diaries, you know, with the CW is the fact that it looks like a show like Gossip Girl or like 90210 on the outside, but when you actually watch it, it's cast much better, the actors are far better, and the writing's far better.
I know this.
Anyway.
Back to Absolute Justice. Sorry about that.
I mean, you know, from the very beginning, you know, we have Chloe walking around, and she's like, we gotta get the Justice League together, and then she meets this strange figure with this American flag costume on, and all of a sudden, you know, he says he's Sylvester Pemberton, but then he throws her in a dumpster, and there's this huge epic fight that we see completely from the perspective of inside the dumpster.
Yeah, so flashing lights and then, like, you know, like icicles smashing through the dumpster.
Which, you know, the icicles actually looked really cool. And, you know, in the very beginning, this...
But you gotta say, you don't want to see the villain right up front.
Exactly.
You know? We're glad it went that way.
I thought they did a great job. You know, this... It's so funny to have... You know, the thing we said afterwards of watching this is, like, how come a 2-hour Smallville is, like, better than any 1-hour Smallville?
Yeah, well, and the way I see it is that they really, really focused on making a movie. They really wanted to make a 2-hour movie that really held up from start to finish. It's like so many episodes back in the last couple seasons have been filler. Like, it's been an entire episode of filler.
Yeah.
And this, I guess, movie is, you know, no filler. It's just a straight story with action and everything you'd want. And then occasionally, you know, remembering that there's other things going on in Smallville, you know?
Well, it's funny because, you know, they got Geoff Johns to write the whole thing. He's a big comic book writer. And what we really got was it was like a comic book. It was like a short, you know, graphic novel, basically. And it was really great. You know, every year they have these Justice League type episodes. And it's really like the kind of the big moment of each season for the last few years.
Every time they do a Justice League episode, it's always one of their best episodes. They never fall short on their Justice League ones.
But this one's amazing because this one's definitely featured the most amount of DC heroes, I think, in one episode.
What I would call them is DC's lost heroes.
Yes.
Because these are the people that you don't really hear about. I think the one you'd probably hear about most is Hawkman. And the thing is, it's Hawkman. You know, it's like the two probably most made fun of heroes in the DC universe are Hawkman and Aquaman, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty fair to say that, I would say, yeah.
But Aquaman still holds a stronger place than Hawkman does, because who puts Hawkman in a story? You know who puts Hawkman in a story? Smallville puts Hawkman in a story. Well, and you know what? Smallville does it right. Good job.
Well,
yay!
You know, one of the great things about Smallville and one of the ways it sort of distinguished itself over the last few years is, you know, a lot of people get upset they can't have Bruce Wayne, they can't have, you know, certain of the big DC characters, but what they do is they showcase... They showcase some of the characters that most likely they are not going to give a full movie to, like Hawkman, like Dr. Fate, you know.
These ones that probably won't even get to be in a Justice League movie or anything like that.
Well, you know, the characters that are, you know, canon and have, you know, been in the Justice League also, but just, they're just a little too much to...
These are the guys that even the Justice League Unlimited kicks out.
But you know, like we said, you know, in this episode, they feature Hawkman, which, you know... in some ways is one of the best things, in other ways not so much. Stargirl, Dr. Fate, the Sandman, the Star-Spangled Kid. I mean,
one of the things what I loved about this episode was that it kind of... Okay. it had this campy feel to it, but I mean that in a good way, because what I mean is that it felt like the comic books of old, with like these guys, you know, so many of them just kind of throwing out one-liners in the exact way that they would have back in the day, the way that Spider-Man used to just spit one-liners at people, and like and the way they would just kind of goof on each other, and like and the way the costumes were kind of really cool but also kind of cheap, you know.
I completely agree, and I think that that's the main thing with Jeff Johns hiring him, is you get somebody who is in the comic book world, who understands comic book continuity, appreciates, you know, comic book continuity. I mean, there's jokes about the Golden Age.
Yeah.
You know, Dr. Fate says that, you know, Clark will lead them into a new Silver Age.
Yep.
You know, there's all kinds of jokes. Like, you know, even in the beginning, Oliver, you know, walks up to Chloe, says, "Where are the rest of the super friends?"
Yeah.
You know, like, there's just, you know, joke, inside thing, if you know about this character. I mean, for me...
For DC fans, this is, like, you would love every other line in this episode will make you go, "Oh, my God, look what they're saying."
I was so happy watching this episode. You know, one, you know, Smallville is one of my guilty pleasures of all time. I can't help but enjoy the show. And it's funny, because at first I would just tell people, well, it's because it's about my two favorite things, hot chicks and superpowers. But now I can actually say it's a decent show. Well, you totally like threw me off there. You were doing charades.
I was trying to get your attention.
Yes. It's not going to happen. I'm going off the rails on a crazy train over here, and you're just going to have to...
How is that any different than usual?
I don't know. It really isn't.
You loved the episode.
Yes, I loved it. And I thought the Dr. Fate stuff was probably my favorite part.
Yeah.
It was just fantastic. I mean, they had the thing where they had the transformation, you know, when Kent Nelson put on the helmet, and he's all, like, you know, messed up because, you know...
The Dr. Fate helmet was too much for him.
Dr. Fate helmet was screwing him up, and that transformation scene was so awesome, when all the golden onk, and, you know, it's funny too, because you watch this original, you know, Just Society of America, and you really see, you know, where Alan Moore got the idea for the Watchmen characters.
And even for where Marvel got their idea for Marvel Civil War, which we were reading back on the history of Justice Society, and pretty much there was this whole thing where the government was insisting that the heroes unmask, and then the heroes were like, "But we don't want to unmask," and so then they started, like, arresting the heroes, and it's like, wow, I've read this just recently. Didn't realize how much they had taken from DC back in the day.
It is so funny too, because, you know, I'm watching this, I'm like, wow, they're doing Watchmen, and then, you know, and then I thought about it and did a little more research. I was like, well, no, actually, Watchmen, you know, is just like this.
Of course, Watchmen is also DC. Like, granted, it was bought by DC, right?
Yes.
But you know, now it is part of the DC canon.
It totally is. Yeah, it totally
is. As Human Target, by the way.
I think Rorschach should have his own show. Like a talk show, like Space Ghost, maybe.
He should totally have his own show, except I'd want Jackie Earle Haley, and he's busy.
Yeah, it's true. That's
being
true.
Awesome on Human Target.
So I have to say, you know, I had a few OMG moments. The first one was when Dr. Fate transformed.
I think I just had an OMG moment.
Why?
Because you just said an OMG moment.
I said it because I wrote OMG. I was that excited.
Wow.
Yeah. Well,
that's creepy.
I can't help it, you know.
Just go. Tell your OMG moment. My head's going to explode.
Well, you know, Dr. Fate, you know, transforms. Totally awesome. Followed by, you know, the Hawkman armor that, you know, looks just like Hawkman's armor. Granted, on the guy, it was a little silly, maybe.
What?
The Hawkman armor a little
bit. But the thing is that the Hawkman armor is, like, you know, it's a uniform.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's like, you can't really complain about a uniform. That's like complaining about the hats that those guys wear outside of Buckingham Palace.
Yeah, but...
You know, it's like yes, it's ridiculous, but it's his traditional armor, and those are fake wings that, like, you know...
Well, yeah, obviously.
No, but I mean, like that's the armor of his people. You know what I mean?
My problem is it was chubby armor.
Oh, well, I figured out that it wasn't chubby armor, but the sides had elastic. And so if he were in shape, then it wouldn't have looked chubby because it would have been in. But the thing is, the elastic let it push out, so it's like his pants were there, and then like 5 inches out from his pants was the armor.
Yes, I got you.
Yeah.
And we also got a supervillain from DC canon, mm-hmm. Icicle 2, the mm-hmm. son of the first Icicle who fought against the Justice Society of America.
We also got a ambiguous group of the DC canon.
Yes, you mean the new
maybe a villain, maybe not a villain, maybe good, maybe bad.
You know, what I like about this mostly is that we find out really what the Tess character is about, and that is that she's a member of the group that is called Checkmate. And this is a...
With the best head of it ever. Like, the best agent ever.
Pam Grier.
Agent Coffee.
Pamela Grier.
Oh, wait, no. I guess it's Agent Waller, right?
Yes.
Agent
Amanda
Coffee
Waller.
Oh,
and it's
Amanda.
Great because, you know, we did a little research, and yes, Checkmate, you know, is part of a DC group. They're sort of, I guess, are they sort of like Blackwater? They're kind of like this company that works for the government.
The thing is that Blackwater is kind of all evil.
Oh, yeah, they're like Cobra. Blackwater is.
Yeah, Blackwater's kind of like Cobra. They're this group that they're kind of ambiguous. You know, they work for the interest of the government, but that doesn't mean that they work for the interest of good. Do you know what I mean? It's like sometimes the good of the government isn't even necessarily the good of the country.
Yeah, and you know, Amanda in the comic
definitely
books,
not always the good of the people.
In the comic books, Amanda Waller, you know, created Checkmate, and they work for the government, and
she also created the Suicide Squad,
which she said in the show, "Welcome to the Suicide Squad," when she I won't say what happened, but basically that's
I love I just love that she's back to playing badass, you know.
It's
you know, we one of our other guilty pleasures over the years was the L Word.
Oh,
which,
yes.
You know, watching her play the sister of a lesbian.
Yes. Nothing wrong with that.
No, but just, like, getting to see Pam Grier, like, you know, we've spent so long with her just being a chick, you know, now, and it's like, yeah, back to kicking butt, back to being tough.
And the sister of Jennifer Beals in that show, who I swear is a vampire.
Well, yeah.
Because she has not aged.
No, she's a vampire.
Since Flashdance.
Right. Yeah, like, no, it's not even a question, Dave. Yeah. She's a vampire.
It's like her
of course
what's
she's a vampire.
Her, Johnny Depp, and apparently Jeremy Piven. Are all vampires because PC
well, yeah,
was on
but,
the other
but,
day.
But Piven was turned into a vampire when he was 40.
Yes.
And so, like, he was pretending to be younger for a really long time.
Yeah. He must have one of those cool rings. That's how he got to do all the outside, you know, from Vampire Diaries. Speaking of which, from the L Word, Mia Kirshner is on Vampire Diaries too. But back to Smallville, we got to see some awesome stuff. Not only did we see Hawkman and we saw Dr. Fate in their costumes, but we also saw the Sandman, which was very cool. And we also, like we said, saw the Star-Spangled Kid. And also... We got Martian Manhunter back. We were able to see. John Jones.
It's really funny because the character of Martian Manhunter, when he's a Martian, the way he's always been drawn has essentially been a rounded Gumby.
Yes.
And so when they made him, you know, when you saw, like, briefly him be the Martian Manhunter as a Martian, that's what he looked like, a rounded Gumby. And it's so funny because on the one hand, it's like, oh, that's just silly looking. On the other hand,
what is going on?
I apparently hit enter. God, I'm...
You're off, man.
I'm...
Thank God the doomsday button is not on the panel, or
we'd all be dead.
Screwed.
I am just, I apologize. That is... Yeah,
it's like the Cuban Missile Crisis around here. What's going on?
I'm freaking out.
I know.
I think I just keep wanting to play the Lost promo.
It's pretty funny, yeah.
It is pretty funny.
But
oh, yeah, anyways, back to Gumby.
Yes.
So on the one hand, you look at it and you're like, that's silly looking. On the other hand, it's like, well, but it looks exactly like John Jones.
Yeah.
But speaking of John Jones, when he walks in, first off, wearing his green shirt and red suspenders that essentially look like the green, the Martian Manhunter arm, like, outfit or whatever.
Exactly, yeah.
He comes in when Green Arrow and Hawkman are, like, having a fight.
The brawling, yeah.
Yeah, and he's like... Is it too late to say we come in peace? It's like, oh my God, Martian, you're awesome.
Totally. There's a few awesome Martian Manor moments. There was
and
that.
I just want Phil Morris back. Like, I wanted him back. I was so sad, like, that, you know, he was in the season with Kara.
Right.
And then you barely ever saw him again. And granted, he didn't have his powers, but he was still a cop, you know? They could have brought him in, like, Phil Morris rules.
Speaking of his power, that was probably the best part of the episode when Dr. Fate helped him out there and kind of opened up a portal to give him back the Manhunter powers, and we got to see him as the Martian Manhunter for a second and be like Chow Yun-Fat with two Berettas.
Yeah,
you know, it's a win-win situation. You know, we got a little Green Arrow Hawkman odd couple action going on, which was actually pretty funny.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like one would spit a line and the other would spit a silly line, and the other would spit a silly line.
Well, now what we really need to know is who was the lamer Smallville superhero. Was it Hawkman or Aquaman? Who came off lamer, you think?
I think that's the thing. Neither of them came off lame. No. Like Smallville is one of those few things that's able to make them not lame, but at the same time, it couldn't really like give them a show of their own.
Yeah.
I mean, we know they tried.
Yeah. Oh, so anyway, at the very end, this was very interesting. At the very end, Amanda Waller says that, you know, there's an army of superheroes and they need to get together if they can survive the apocalypse that's coming. And, you know, we already know if you're watching the show that, you know, maybe they're talking about Zod and the Kryptonians. But what I think when she said that is there's a really famous storyline that involved the Suicide Squad, and it was about Darkseid coming and trying to destroy all the superheroes on Earth so he could take over.
Well,
so
I mean,
that's
after
what I'm thinking might start happening
after already having the.
They already had Doomsday.
Exactly.
They already had Zod.
They had Brainiac. Yeah. Brainiac. So yeah. Darkseid seems like a good, you know, the reasonable thing that would be coming.
Also,
I'm just glad to know that they're doing more and more with the Justice League. They're going to be bringing people back. I mean, like, I think Zatanna is going to be back this season, probably Black Canary. They'll probably have Aquaman and Impulse back. They're probably just going to be bringing all the Justice League together, and I'm sure that the Justice Society, this isn't the last time we'll see all of them.
Oh, yeah, no, hopefully not.
They've even alluded to that they're trying to get the team back together, which means that we could be seeing a Green Lantern. We could be seeing, you know, some of these other awesome old characters.
Yeah. Oh, and there was a really cool part where Clark was going through and looking at all the different stuff. They had the Green Lantern lantern,
mm-hmm.
and they had, Jay Garrick's Flash helmet, Mr. Terrific's belt, Our Man's hourglass.
But
all kinds of cool stuff.
But yeah, so it was a great episode. Try and catch it if you can find it somewhere to catch. And
yes.
We just wanted to take another minute to thank David Bell for recording the interview with us.
Yes.
And thanks again to Daniel Scher for the translation.
Yep.
It was really, really helped things along. And we'll be back.
We want to thank Magnolia and
yeah.
Magnet and all the people at Falco Inc. and all kinds of people. And also, I'd like to say that the Avatar trailer, if you can see it for...
The Small, Last Airbender. Last Airbender.
Oh, yeah. Last Airbender, yes.
And we'll be back next week, same time, same place.
Geek World. Geek World.
This is Anime.
And Dave.
From Geek World. On next week's show, Geek World gets lost.
One has been a fan all along. One has sworn to stick it out to the end. And one is totally fed up.
So join us next week
when we reveal the true nature of the smoke monster.
What?
The fate of the time travelers.
We don't know anything about that.
And the secret of the island.
Yeah, right. Like they have any idea how they're actually going to end.
Geek World. Bumpin' Thursdays at noon.